Yeah, exactly. EVs, saving households from rocky road since 2025.
That's perfect. Can we trademark that?
Welcome to the Techishly Gen podcast. We are smart tech for real life. Think of it as your girlfriend's guide to gadgets.
Here to help us, tech life columnist Jennifer Jolly.
Here to help me test them out, Jennifer Jolly.
Jen is the nationally syndicated tech life columnist for USA Today. You always blew our mind.
Jennifer Jolly, whose name is just fun to say.
Jennifer Jolly!
Hey there, welcome to Techishly Gen. I am Jennifer Jolly here with producer Scott. Hey Scott, how's it going down there in Austin, Texas?
Oh man, things are good. Austin's still super hot though.
Gross. Haven't they gotten the memo? It's like November.
I know, but it also means my kids are still out riding bikes all the time. They're 6 and 8 years old now, and they're getting a little bit more adventurous. So my wife and I, we got this new Garmin Bounce 2 smartwatch. I just posted a review today. They love.
Yeah, I saw that, by the way. It is blowing up. People love your reviews. I love that they think that I wrote them because they're on our website. But you wrote this one and I edited it. So I'll take just a shred of credit because, of course, I will. But it's awesome. I love it because for years, people pitch all these gadgets, but we don't like to cover them. I won't cover anything I don't try for myself, but I don't have young kids anymore. So this was perfect in your wheelhouse, all the puns intended, because you let them go out on their bikes, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, you've tested, I don't know, 15 or 20 different kids' smartwatches.
Yeah.
And I just really liked the Bounce too.
Yeah. And it also was great because you were saying like, oh, I didn't know that a kid's smartwatch would have things like geofencing. So geofencing, that's important because you can set this like invisible fence. Well, you tell it better because you're living through it.
Yeah, exactly. So geofencing is basically, I can set different areas and name them. So if they go to a friend's house, I'll get a notification to my phone that my kids have arrived. And then if they also leave that area, I will get a notification as well saying like, oh, they've left. And then I can either follow up with them or I can go to the Garmin Junior app and I can actually locate exactly where they are and where they're going.
Yeah. So basically they want independence. They're 6 and 8, like you said, best kids in the whole wide world. They want independence, but you want to keep an eye on them without going down that whole rabbit hole of cell phones, right?
Yeah, exactly. Smartphones bad, smartwatch good.
Yeah. And it lets you, like you said, it lets you geofence, you get an alert. It also kind of helps, let's be honest, your anxiety a little bit.
Yeah, I think for my wife and I, it's letting the reins go a little bit. But at the same time, we still have an idea of where they are. They're kids, so they're exploring. But we also live in a neighborhood in the suburbs, which is pretty busy. A lot of cars, a lot of different streets. I think our neighborhood is like 22 miles like altogether. So we just want to kind of know where they are. But at the same time, you and I were 8 years old and 6 years old at one point. Like, I want them to ride their bikes. I want them to be outside. I do not want them inside.
Yeah. And I'm honestly not sure how I survived. Seriously, I was riding my horse, you know, and this isn't like some fancy, like you see on TV horse, like I'm in a stable with a helmet on. Oh no, I grew up in Kenai, Alaska. I was doing stuff that was super dangerous. I don't know. I've had 11 concussions. That explains a lot about me. I hope that your children do not have that many, but let me ask you this. Who's the tech really for, you or your kids?
Oh, it's absolutely for us. When they're not using it, we make them turn the watch off and put it in a drawer because we don't want them using it all the time. It's just, you know, it's another distraction. But for us, at the same time, it's a great buffer to keep them safe. I will say the big negative that I found was the price. It's quite expensive, and it only has a day and a half of battery life. So yeah, we just have them turn it off, put it in a drawer. The next time they want to use it, open that drawer, turn it on and put it back on.
That's crazy that it only has a day and a half, because doesn't the one that you wear for all your crazy triathlons and stuff, doesn't it have like a 30-day battery life?
Yeah, 21. So yeah, I was a bit surprised by that. Garmin is the smartwatch king of batteries.
Yeah, so, seriously.
Yeah, just kind of weird, but you know, it is what it is.
Okay, so I don't want to like beat this thing to a pulp here, but go to techish.com, read Scott's review. You can also read it at his site, Front Pack Sports. We'll keep talking about this. I just recently, back in August or September, reviewed the Pinwheel smartwatch. Love it. Love so many things about it. Very similar to this one, but also has a little bit, it's for a little bit older kids, like 7 to 14, and it has a touch of kind of safe AI. You can read about all of those. I like to call this kind of tech training wheel tech, and more parents need to think of it that way. You know, I've been saying for years, you don't just toss your car keys to a toddler and hope for the best. So it's the same thing with smartphones, social media. Just wait.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of batteries, that's a great segue. We have a battery podcast today.
Yeah, we really do. So let me ask you, could you live without your cell phone?
Yeah, absolutely. I would live without my cell phone.
Yeah, same. But before we go full off grid, let me tell you about a gadget I can't live without: my backup battery. This is, it sounds like I'm going into one of those podcast commercials. I'm not. I'm telling you that I have a backup battery with me at all times to keep my gadgets charged, because I am an addict, and the first step's admitting it. But here's a big thought, and the focus of a story that we're going to talk more about today, the focus of this podcast today. It's also a story that I recently wrote for USA Today that again went totally viral, kind of like your bounce to a review blowing up. Well, this one blew up. It's, what if your car could be a backup battery, not just for your phone or your laptop, but for your whole life?
What do you mean? Like you can charge your laptop from your car? EVs do that.
No. Think bigger, much bigger. So think about America's electricity grid being squeezed from all sides. One in every four homes experience power outages each year. I live on an island in the Pacific Northwest where power outages are not rare. They're routine. I'm talking windstorms, wildfires, sometimes just a random Tuesday and the lights go out again. So we know across the country, extreme weather is making it worse. So is rising demand. Millions of people are plugging in, switching to electric heat, charging EVs in their driveways, and running homes that depend more on clean energy than ever. Add the surge of energy-hungry AI data centers. We are talking about it every day. Add all that to the mix. And the system that keeps our lights on is stretched to its limits. So all of this has engineers, utilities, and automakers asking a once kind of pretty wild question. What if your car is the key to keeping the power on?
So wait, can EVs actually save the grid?
Well, yeah, I mean, GM, Ford, and Honda, they're all betting that they can. And the concept is called bidirectional charging. That turns an electric vehicle into a rolling battery that not only draws power from the grid, but can also send it back when you need it. So in theory, your family car could double as a little mini power plant. That's the theory. But Scott, you know, for me, for us, for all of this whole techish world, we have to try it for ourselves. So we did. For our experiment, GM loaned us a Sierra EV-AT4 and installed its new home energy system in our garage. Now, that system stores power and moves it both ways, between home and a vehicle and back again. And here's the crazy part. It went insanely well. I was shocked. Again, you can read all about it in our USA Today story. You can watch our YouTube video at techish.com. But right after we did that, we brought Lynn Ames here to the pod. Now, she's just a super cool woman. She's GM's behind-the-scenes energy whisperer, and she's leading the strategy and partnerships, really, for GM Energy. That's the division turning cars into power sources. So I started to think of her during this conversation as kind of a translator between Detroit's big iron engineers and Silicon Valley software brains and the utilities that actually keep all these lights on. One quick note before we dive in. We spoke with Lynn just before GM reported a $1.6 billion loss tied to its EV business, which raises a big question. Can cars that give back still move the company and this country forward? Let's hear from her, with us chiming in every now and again to give some explainers where we need to. Cool, Scott?
Yeah, let's do it.
Lynn, it's 11 p.m. Your neighborhood just lost power. You live in San Diego. You know, it could be wildfires. It could be a giant storm. But, you know, your daughter's scared. Your fridge is about to go out for, you know, who knows how long. How exactly does that EV that's sitting in your garage or out in your driveway save the night minute by minute? Walk me through it. Do you run extension cords? Does your coffee maker work? I mean,
so the outage begins, your home system automatically, right, which is great, islands your home and says like, okay, what are those essential things that we need to power? So a lot of times it'll be your fridge, maybe it's your Wi-Fi, maybe you have medical devices, whatever it is, it'll go to those things. There's no noise, no fumes, no manual setup. It's seamless. Then through those first, let's call it 8 hours or so, and maybe it kicks on after that, but let's say it's 8 hours, those things continue to be powered and you're at home with peace of mind knowing that what you need still has electricity. If you go into overnight, that's okay. We have a GM app where you can see how much power you have left, and then you can also have another source of power with our residential storage system, or maybe you have solar, so everything is connected and feeding that battery and your vehicle-to-home capability so that you still have what you need at home. And beyond that, again, you can just manage it with our app. And then let's say the electricity clicks back on at hour 16. The home system seamlessly transitions back and resets everything automatically for future use. And that's it. It's just that easy.
You know, I lived through that experience. And you're right. I couldn't believe like that dark start. I couldn't believe how seamless it was, how simple, how easy. And I was really surprised by it wasn't just ours. It was potentially, depending on how we were using it and how much charge was in the car and all those variables, it was days and days, potentially even weeks.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, I'm in California. We have blackouts and brownouts. This is just a normal way of life. I also grew up in Texas where it was hurricane season all the time. And so we also had weeks without power. And so this is a great solution for anybody who is going through, whether it's 2 hours or days or weeks, to have that peace of mind and that backup for your home, for your family. And then on the funny side of things, so in California, we were going through one of our brownouts or blackouts. The power went out. My neighbor actually has a Silverado, and he decided to invite everyone over to his house. So he powered his garage, his refrigerator, the lights, the stereo, of course, which is super important, and invited everybody over. And most people didn't have a V2H system where they were able to then power their fridge. So they had food, right, that is going to go bad. And so everybody brought over food. The music was so loud and the neighborhood was so quiet that everybody heard it and started coming over more and more. And everyone was grilling and having a great time and also connecting, which we didn't know we were all going to do on a random Tuesday night at 5 p.m., but there we were. And the power, of course, came on eventually, but people still talk about it as like the great neighborhood blackout party where we all came over there with his Silverado. So, you know, there's sometimes a positive story along with blackouts.
So fast forward 100 million years, because that's how old I feel today. And you're turning every car into a tiny power plant.
That's true. That is true. That's also super exciting. If you think about, you know, turning on my energy nerd self for a second, you know, what we're doing today with
EVs. Yes, please. We love that.
Great. What we're doing today with EVs and V2H, so powering people's homes, giving people peace of mind while they're awesome. And we're so excited about that. But if you were to start to look into the future, we're really paving the way for something that's called vehicle to grid or V2G. And this is where a lot of previous experience comes as well. So think about a world where all these EVs are intelligently connected to the grid, right? And we are supporting the grid, which is great. So helping out utilities, but also we are buying and selling in the background with software, of course, the energy to the grid and getting paid for it. And so let's say that during a California wildfire, they want to shut off power, but they know that there are 100,000 EVs in this certain territory. And so they're going to send you an app notification that says, hey, would you like to participate into this program? You could click yes or no. And if you do, then you could get paid a certain dollar amount for every amount that you sell back to the electric grid, to the utility. And so like, what a cool world that you can now make money from your electric vehicle in the future.
I love a good side hustle. That sounds awesome. Set it and forget it. But when your vehicle is giving back to the grid, who decides when it gives back? Do I? Do you?
It's always about the customer. So General Motors always puts the customer first, and you can be assured that your mobility needs are the top priority. If your car happens to be plugged in at night and you would like to opt in either automatically or on your own into these programs, you can. And if you don't want to, you don't have to. But mobility is always first.
Well, you mentioned connecting your car to this like higher tech world or tech ecosystem. So I have to ask, what keeps that from becoming kind of a hacker's dream come true? I mean, we saw this with our home security cameras. I mean, I can barely keep my Wi-Fi router working half of the time. Like, where does all of that come in?
That's a good question. I mean, I think you would just be rest assured General Motors has all the protections in place to make sure that nothing happens to our software or to anything with our customers. That would definitely be our top priority. So that would not be something that we would worry about today. But what is really exciting is the ability to actually, if you think about all those vehicles, connect all of those vehicles, you know, in that software cloud to be able to do something super impactful for the environment.
All right, let's take a little break from the interview and talk about, I mean, you were here when we were doing this experiment. And one of the things that we did was we took this amazing EV, this GMC Sierra, and we parked it next in a field here by our house, parked it next to a little fire pit, and we had a bonfire. We had a bunch of family come over. And you said something to me that was so cool. It was something like, I've never seen a car be the center of a party before. What was that? Do you remember that?
Yeah. The thing that was most amazing to me was having the truck as the grand guest of this entire evening. So not only did it power your floodlights, but it powered all the lights around the bonfire. And then it also included 4 different charging stations in the bed of the truck. So we were rocking a blender. We were rocking tunes. We were charging electric bikes. So, I mean, for me, it was pretty magical just to be a part of that. I thought of, you know, football tailgates, obviously backyard party. It was just pretty magical.
Yeah, I think in one of our videos, I said something like it can keep your tools powered. And yeah, for me, a blender to have frozen margaritas in real time, that's a tool. That's an important tool. Come on.
That's the most important tool.
You know, also just kind of unpacking a little bit about what we've talked about so far, what I got from a lot of the experts that I interviewed for the print piece out of this whole story is that this is kind of the moment everybody's been waiting for, this real world proof that the technology actually works. I mean, for years, this was a theory. It's been done in a lot of pilot programs, but now we are actually seeing it in people's homes. That's a pretty huge step forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the timing isn't accidental at all. We're really entering this pivotal moment, which is interesting to see GM trying to lead the charge. But
yeah,
if you think about
it, pun intended, of course.
Yeah, exactly. But if you think about it, electricity demands, they just keep climbing. We all want more and more. We want energy like for everything that we own now, from heat pumps to our AI data centers. You know, the extreme weather keeps ramping up, which just puts more and more stress on the grid.
Yeah, one expert we talked with calls bi-directional charging. That whole idea it can go from your vehicle to your house, from your house to your vehicle. He calls that a relief valve for an overworked grid, a way to make better use of energy that's already there. I had never thought about this before. I had never thought about the hundreds of thousands of EVs that are sitting in people's driveways and their garages, and that the potential scale to help us with our energy needs in this country is enormous. I mean, we might already have more energy sitting in vehicles in our driveways than in all grid scale batteries combined. I mean, even if a fraction of that could be tapped, it kind of changes the whole equation.
Yeah. And I think about it every year. The Texas grid is not connected to the national grid. So whether it's winter or summer, we're having blackouts quite often.
Yeah.
So if we could just take a little bit of stress off of that and not have blackouts when it's piping hot or sometimes when it's freezing cold for days on end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
I mean, or you guys could just pack up and move up to, you know, Whidbey Island and be our neighbor. I mean.
No, that's never
happened. Ooh, okay. Well, one other point about all of this. Let's get back to our conversation with Lynn Ames, because this is not her first rodeo. Well, and that goes back to your background before GM. I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Is it Nuvi or Nuve?
It's Nuvi, yeah.
Nuvi. You were the vice president of Nuvi, one of the earliest companies to actually prove this vehicle-to-grid tech works. That's kind of the science fiction turned science part. Your EV doesn't just take electricity, it can give it back. So how was that? What was that like early on when you went, OMG, this is going to work? Tell me about that.
We really were groundbreaking. You know, we had a vehicle-to-grid experience and experts, and we were trying to prove how it would work. And so we did a lot of early work over in Europe and worked with the grid operators over there, the available EVs over there from Nissan and the bidirectional charging stations, which there were only a few, and proved that it did work and that there were benefits for fleets initially and for the grid. And then after proving that out in different pockets across Europe, we brought it here to the United States, and we heavily focused on California. We worked with the California Energy Commission and the CPUC and got a $9 million grant to do the first ever V2G demonstration in the United States, which was in California, in San Diego, of course, in my backyard. And we did it at the University of California. We had about 40 cars, and we were able to prove to the California state and to the government that this works, that it's worth investing in policy and regulation around vehicle to grid, and really making sure that there's adoption pathways in the state, which there are now. And then that influenced a lot of the other states and their policies and regulations and their, you know, utilities, the way that they look at it. And now we have so many vehicles that also have this capability. And so just thinking about early days, where we came from to where we're going now with GM, and the scale that we can hit with General Motors in this kind of a way is super exciting.
How did you become an energy nerd? At what point driving around in Texas did you say, I'm going to be an energy nerd?
Yeah, no time when I was living in Texas, but it's interesting. Actually, my parents were both in energy, but they were on the oil and gas or LNG or liquefied natural gas side. And so one of my biggest mentors was my mom. She actually passed away a few years ago in an accident, but she was really an incredible businesswoman in addition to being a mom. And she was just this visionary who actually created technology and strategies that are still used today in the LNG area. She was the executive vice president for Shell, and she was responsible for the global LNG portfolio as well as their trading business. And so just growing up with both of them, learning about energy markets, learning about oil and gas, and also seeing both of their successes really inspired me to want to join the energy industry.
What's the EV moment that kind of made you realize, look, this isn't just a new car, it's really like a new kind of appliance for your life?
I think about it like this. You're making an investment into something that is so important to you, right? Your vehicle, like we were just talking about. But your vehicle can also do so much more than drive. And so I think it's important to us and for us to make these collaborations with utilities to make sure that there continue to be these incentives and rebates that just make it more affordable, easy, and kind of like the why not? Like, duh, of course we're going to do this. I'm definitely going to sign up for that so that while I'm sleeping, my vehicle can potentially support this program and I make money in the morning. So for me, it's just an obvious answer.
Yeah. So what's the catch? How much does this thing cost?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that really is the catch, right? That's the reason I don't own an EV yet myself. I've borrowed an awful lot of them to report on them over the years, but I don't own one because out of the gate, you're spending $30,000 or more for this experiment that we ran. That vehicle alone was like $90,000. So between the vehicle, the charger, the wiring, the permits, a full setup typically runs several $1,000. So I did the math. My test, our test would have been $103,000 for that specific truck and the GM energy system that was loaned to us. I mean, that's so far above my budget and most households' budget. And I think that that's the point. Now, GM made the point when I wrote about that in the article that I wrote that, you know, you can get in the price to entry in an EV is much lower than 90,000. I think they were started about 30,000. But, you know, I think that the EV power systems in general need time to become more broadly affordable and simple. I kind of think of it like solar panels a decade ago. Now they're kind of everywhere. Even where I live, there's solar panels all over the place and I barely see the sun half the time.
But I will say, I think the fact that GM does offer a $30,000 vehicle, which in today's like world, that's almost unheard of, a $30,000 vehicle that you can drive but also power your house. That to me was really encouraging.
You know, for me, I have wanted an electric vehicle for a long time, since the beginning of them, but I've never been able to afford one. And I think that a lot of Americans feel that way. How do you bridge that gap?
If you look at GM, we have more than a dozen EVs rolling out with different models that are really for everybody. We just announced the Chevy Bolt last week. This is a, you know, small, fun car to drive. I've driven it actually below a $30,000 price point. It has upgrades like V2H capable. And then we have that all the way through our Equinox. We have truck options like the Sierra and the Silverado from Chevy. And then we have our luxury line, which includes the Cadillac, like the one you see behind me. So really, there's an EV for everybody. We have just amped up our investments on EV, and we're trying to also make sure that EVs are for everybody, that there's something for everyone, along with our GM Energy Solutions to go along with them.
What was your first car? How did it kind of make you think about your future? And did you know this was going to be your job someday?
Absolutely not. But yeah, my first car was a bright red Pontiac Firebird, and it was a stick shift. I particularly remember my dad teaching me how to drive a stick back in the day, and I thought I was very cool. I also remember like getting my permit on the very first day that I could and getting my license on my 16th birthday and just being so excited to drive. And then, of course, I think that experience that so many of us had, at least back then, right? Just driving, blasting music, belting out all the lyrics, and enjoying freedom. And so I think carry forward to today, working at a car company definitely makes me, anyway, look back to some of those important moments of my youth and even of now, and just think about how cars really do make a big difference in our lives. Now, I think I do the same thing with my daughter. I love those bonding moments, you know, on the way to her horseback riding lessons or even on the way to school or with her friends in the back when they're all giggling and talking about what's going on in school. And nothing else can create that. You know, we live together, but it's different when you're in your home or you're in a park or in a store than when you're in your car. And so, yeah, just super thankful for those experiences for sure.
Some of the best conversations I've ever had with my daughter took place in that car, driving to school, driving home from school, driving out to the horse riding lessons, same kind of thing. And, you know, listening to audiobooks like the entire Harry Potter series and then later, you know, the Twilight series together. I mean, it is. And then singing, you know, Lizzo at the top of our lungs, like those are, or Taylor Swift, of course, those are the best moments. They are really the moments that our memories are made in. And when you think about how much of our lives we spend in our vehicles, you do realize, like I've said this for a long time, it's kind of the biggest personal gadget that we own.
It definitely is. It definitely is. I think we're really lucky to have vehicles like ours that do so much more than just drive. Like back then, think about what we're talking about and those memories that we had when we were little. But now to think about the vehicles we have and everything that they can do, it's pretty amazing.
What do you think the hardest part of your job is?
Yeah, so I think it is getting this 100-year-old giant who is created amazing vehicles for so long to transition into the energy opportunity that we have in front of us. And a lot of that is about education, right? We spend a lot of time educating internally. Here's the opportunity, and here's why we might want to do that one thing slightly differently, or can we look at it from this perspective? And then also bringing together the 100-year-old utility giant to work with the 100-year-old car giant and trying to get them to figure out a way to work together that makes everybody happy. It's an awesome challenge. That's why I'm here. I'm really excited to do it, but it is a challenge.
I mean, it still has that startup-y kind of feel to it in a really invigorating kind of motivational way. Would you agree, disagree? Like, what's the same and what's different on your daily work life?
Yeah. When you've worked at a real startup, it does still get different. But I will say that the acceptance of new ideas, the innovation of technology, the excitement of the team, and the fact that we're doing things that haven't been done before and doing them at scale, those things feel like a startup. And I love that. That drives me.
It's kind of the Apple meets Anderson Cooper version of electricity. I mean, you're taking something boring and you're making it kind of personal and powerful. Do you agree? Disagree? What do you think about it?
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. That's a good point. Yeah, I totally agree. It is personal. And I think at the end of the day, just like your phone, right, you have it in your hand and what you choose to use it for is up to you. So you might choose just to use the basic iPhone. You might choose just to drive this awesome EV, and that's up to you. However, what's built inside of it is the features, the functionalities, the capability to not only, of course, drive and have this awesome experience, but also be able to power your home, to have peace of mind during outages, and be able to make money in utility programs in the future. And
what's the biggest thing that you want someone listening to this or watching this to walk away, go away with, think about, and do?
Yeah. To me, I think it's, you know, if you drive an EV, I would urge you to try to understand if you can tap into some of these features like V2H that we have today. Do you have a utility program that's available? And is there an opportunity for you to have cost savings on your bill or potentially even money that you can make? So I think that's our, you know, EV pitch. I would say if you don't have an EV, like, check them out. You can easily go into your dealership at GM. You can call us at our GM Energy, you know, home energy consultant website and talk to us about the potential products and solutions we have and just get comfortable with it. They'll walk you through all the details. They say, hey, what kind of EV are you interested in? And here are your options. And then here are your product options. And then here's how you can save money or make money. And, you know, no pressure, really educate yourself to see if there's an opportunity that you want to grab onto.
People are very worried that the creation of the batteries is a huge stretch on natural resources, that these batteries are going to die in 5 years, and that'll be an even bigger stretch on our resources, the electricity needed stretch on our resources. How do you convince people that this really is the right way to go to do better for our planet and for our natural resources?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people's concerns about EV, frankly, are things that have advanced, right? That maybe aren't reality today. And so we talked a little bit about charging, but you think about home charging. Home charging is so easy. You have it installed, and then you literally, just like your phone, you plug it in at night. That's it. You wake up every morning, and your car is charged. There's nothing to worry about. GM has also invested heavily in public charging, and we have over 250,000 public charging sites that we have invested in with partners like EVgo and Pilot Flying J, and we're going to continue to grow that number so that if you're not at home, you have plenty of options for charging when you're out in the wild.
What do you say to somebody who says, I do not want Big Auto in my breaker box?
So I wouldn't think about it like Big Auto in your breaker box. And that's exactly why we partner with your utility. We are not the ones that is like providing you electricity. All we're doing is providing you the solution to have energy choice, energy freedom, and peace of mind in your app. And why not do that? You already are in your app anyway. So why not use it to help you make those decisions with your home energy? And then, of course, the partnerships we have with utilities.
I love this, and just so happy to get a chance to meet you and talk with you.
I also love this too. Thank you so much. I appreciate this. The feeling of this one just feels different than the ones I'm usually on. So I like this. This feels good. It does feel like we're going to speak to the masses instead of what I think I'm used to speaking to, which is like our energy tech nerds, which is also important. But it's important to get the message.
We all love and appreciate a good energy tech nerd, but can I just say, can we just stop for a second and recognize that we are two women, two blonde women, talking to each other about the future of vehicles in this country? Can I just get an amen all up in here that we're having this conversation? You know, some people may think like, okay, is that really a big deal? But honestly, I've been covering tech for ever, and I don't remember a time like this. This is really cool.
I'll go amen, and I totally agree.
I loved that the whole conversation, we're talking about like women leading change, tech that actually helps people. It's the kind of story that actually reminds me why we're doing this show.
I mean, honestly, that hit me too. We talk about EVs and energy like it's tech and wires, but at the end of the day, it's all about the people, right? It's about the families. Lynn talked about the neighborhood. It's about keeping the lights on, both literally and figuratively.
Exactly. That's what I kept thinking about too. Like just how much of this kind of comes back to connection. A mom, a daughter, a company trying to build something that actually helps people.
Yeah. And a car that just might save your fridge full of ice cream during a blackout.
I mean, that's the headline.
Yeah, exactly. EVs, saving households in Rocky Road since 2025.
That's perfect. Can we trademark that? Okay, final thoughts. My takeaway from this conversation is how much heart is hiding inside all this high tech. Lynn's story, she's a single mom, inspired by her own mom, helping reinvent an industry. It is proof that progress isn't just about innovation, it's about intention. EV sales might be cooling, headlines might sound grim, but the ideas, the people, that all still matters. The technology to stabilize our grid already exists. It is sitting in millions of driveways. What's missing now is scale, simplicity, and trust. If automakers can deliver affordable EVs that double as reliable home power, this could be one of the most practical and empowering energy shifts of our lifetime. So yeah, I'm going to stay cautiously optimistic because that's just kind of the way I roll. Scott, thanks for hanging out and for putting up with me.
Always. And next week, I want a truck that makes the ice cream.
Deal. And thank you for hanging out here with us on Techishly Gen. What'd you think about today's episode of Techishly Gen? Be sure to let me know. Follow our newsletter. Reach out on the socials. Can't wait to see you right back here on the next installment of Techishly Gen.